Gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Comaholics.
Yeah.
As always, I'm your host, Dirt, with my co-host here, The Apocalypse. And today we're here to talk about comic books. And, of course, as always, while we're talking about comic books, we're having some beers. And tell everybody, since these beers are your doing, Apocalypse here, why don't you tell us about your apocalyptic brew?
Well, everyone, this is a Scottish ale, brewed with Edinburgh Scottish ale yeast and also peated malt. So, rather tasty stuff.
Louder.
It's about 6% alcohol, and I love it.
You don't have to yell, but talk a little louder than that. You want people to hear you at least a little bit.
Okay.
And now you're not going to talk. Okay. Well, now we see how this show is. This show is off to a stellar start. I can only imagine how much better it's going to get as time goes on.
Honestly, it's my first beer. Really.
Really? Huh. Yeah, but what else have you... Never mind. Okay, so we've got two trade paperbacks and one single issue to talk about today. This is our September episode. And so we've got just a random assortment of books here. There's no theme this month, so we're going to start off here with the first book here is The Sword, Volume 1, Fire. And this is from the Luna Brothers and Image Comics. And this one, this was actually your request that we do this book.
Yeah, a buddy of mine turned me on to this. Actually, the reason this fell in my lap was I wanted to start collecting the individual issues, and then you suggested, well, why don't you get the trade? And picked it up, and, what do you think of it? I've been dying to find out what you think of this comic book, to be honest.
Well, first of all, this is from the Luna Brothers, so the artwork style, they have I haven't even really started drinking yet, and already I'm like this.
Well,
it's a very original art style.
Yeah.
It's distinctive. It has very much a flavor of animation to it. A lot of it looks like still animation frames.
Well, it's very clean, and it reminds me of Crossed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does.
Hmm. Fair enough. But to me, it really does look like animation. And a lot of times they do a lot of computerized effects with blurs and electricity and things like that. Yeah. And so it does have a very unique, distinct style that the Luna Brothers are known for. And so I enjoy their artwork.
What else has the Luna Brothers done? Because you know, let me set the record straight here. I'm a newbie. I've only been started collecting. I know. Hold your breath, folks. Since like last September. Yeah, 32 years old, and I decided I want to start collecting comic books. So you know, I may sound naive at times because a lot of these writers and artists are brand new to me, which I think is exciting for this show because I kind of bring a fresh perspective.
Well, they've done books like Ultra, which was... That's my glass. Where's your glass?
Oh, yeah. Mine's over here. Back off,
don't
man.
Drink my beer, man.
Back off.
Ultra, which was like glamorous superheroes, I want to say, like supermodel superheroes type of deal. They also did a series called Girls, which... I think it's what they're most known for because they drew a lot of naked girls in it. Uh-huh. And so that kind of... it was a horror story, basically, about... I think they were aliens. that landed on
Sexy
Earth.
Sexy aliens?
Yes, they were naked girl aliens.
Wow. Okay.
In a small town. And so, yeah, people were like, well, I don't know about, oh, boobies. And so then that became, you know, a big book for them.
Which is kind of funny, you know, because when I was reading this, I kind of had a feeling like they wanted more nudity in it, but it just didn't, it wasn't in there.
Yeah, this was not the story for that type of thing.
No.
But so it is a distinctive style, and I do enjoy it. It is not your classic comic artwork. It is something completely different, and so I do
enjoy
it.
Which is what we're all about on this show, is something completely different.
Or we are just something completely different. I'm not sure,
sure
exactly what that is. But the story itself is the story of basically a girl who is in a wheelchair. She's a paraplegic. She's been that way for several years now. And just one day, randomly, people break into her house. They demand a sword. They have special powers.
Well, they demand the sword from her father.
They demand the sword from her father. He denies knowing anything what they're talking about, says it must be some sort of mistake. They end up slaughtering the family, and as they go to kill the girl, the house is on fire, it collapses, she escapes, but she finds this sword in the remains of the house. It somehow cures her, allows her to walk, it gives her special powers, the ability to heal, to do massive leaps, it makes her very strong, agile, makes her a very deft killer. And she basically finds herself on the run from these people who are trying to get the sword. And
I think the Luna Brothers also make it known that she instantly has this knowledge. It's not like she fumbles and, you know, it's not like it's not like when Spider-Man first started learning his abilities, you know, he had a kind of baby step. She just, like, as soon as she held that sword, it was like...
She knew something was up, but she didn't really know why. She didn't know where these powers came from exactly, but she knew... instantly, like if she cut her hand, it was going to heal. You know, that kind of stuff. So, turns out her father had been a writer and had taught writing, creative writing courses at a local college. And one of his former students shows up to the father's funeral and starts talking about how he used to tell these stories of this character who had the sword, who was like 4,000 years old, and all these adventures. And she begins to realize that these stories that her father was telling as part of this creative writing class that he taught was his actual life.
Yeah, Dimitri, I believe.
Dimitrios.
Dimitrios. There right. we go, Dimitrios.
And so she basically tries to figure out exactly who these people are, why they're coming for her, what's so special about the sword, and how to take them down. So this is volume one. I think there's four volumes altogether as part of the whole series. And... I enjoyed it. I really did. I think my biggest problem with the whole structure of it is that it starts out pretty strong and pretty fast. But then when you get to like the last two issues of this collection, it really bogs down with the history, with them explaining everything about the character and how there was this crazy woman and she prayed to a god that she claimed was the one true god, but she had these offspring, and they all had these powers, and they attacked the Mayans, and it just kind of got bogged down there at the end of this volume, which...
So do you think that they should have put in all this, the first few issues, and then built up to what was coming?
I think a lot of the story, the way they break it down towards the end of this volume, which granted, this is... I think issues 1 through 6 collected together. So this would be issues 5 and 6 where she's hearing these stories and putting together the history of these characters and whatever. It just felt to me, maybe it's all in issue 6, I don't quite remember, but it just felt to me like I didn't need to see all of it. Like the guy's telling about these people and all he had to really say is, you know, the Mayans cast out this woman who they said was crazy.
Right.
But instead you have like, a page and a half of this woman, and the people don't like her, and then they throw her out, and she goes off into the mountains, and
her children come back. See,
a lot of that to me, like a lot of that story, like that whole story could have been 4 pages instead of an entire issue. You know what I mean? Because I don't really care that much about those people. I care about her. She's the protagonist of the story. She's right. the one who has the sword. She's the one whose life has been turned upside down. She's now the new hero. I need to know is that these people have these powers from whatever time in the past, but I don't necessarily need to spend all of that time reading about them being bad rulers, and the one brother getting too much power, and the other three wanting to bring him down, and then they all forge this sword with their powers, and they put it in a statue, and then the guy comes and takes the sword.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like a lot of,
I was interested in the side story, to be honest with you. I liked it. Cause I was, well, the artwork of the sword, it's very simple, you know, it's, very basic, and the first couple issues, I thought it did kind of jump in really too quick. And the whole time I was thinking, well, I want to know more about the sword, and where did the sword come from, and,
well,
you know, how did that connect to her? But, so.
Hey, let me take another look at this real quick. Here's issue. I guess it's all in issue 6. So it's basically almost the entire
and
issue
And I like how the story all tied back to Demetrius. And why Demetrius was involved with the sword at all, and why he ended up being he's basically the caretaker of the sword. And if anything, I think they left a lot of holes as to, and I guess you're gonna find out later, you know, cause I'm reading this all new, is that as it continues on, I think we'll learn more about what happened in those, 4,000 years that he has the sword.
But like, for instance, right here, in issue, and you guys of course can't see this, this is the podcast, but here in issue 6, you know, this whole page is basically devoted to showing that these people have these special powers, right?
The different elements.
Right. Except we've already seen...
Let us clarify this. Basically, the woman goes up to the mountains, she dies or whatever happens.
Somehow she has like 4 virgin births.
Four virgin births, and they all have powers of the different elements of the earth.
Water, earth, air, and fire.
Fire, yeah. And they come down, and at first they're not really seeking wrath, but then they're mistreated.
The Mayans don't like them because, of course, the Mayans are idolistic society. They don't like this idea.
Yeah, they didn't like the
one
god. That's why the woman was cast off to begin with, because she worshipped the one god. So I was very interested in all
that's
going on.
But my point being is here, you've got almost an entire page devoted to showing that these guys have powers, and we've seen all their powers. We saw all their powers in issue 1, where they attack the family. So we see them make the ice and cut people. We see them electrocute somebody. We see them, you know, and so it's like, okay, I've seen all that. This to me feels like it's kind of retreading that same ground. And I didn't necessarily feel like we needed 20 pages of story of all of that stuff that happened 4,000 years ago. Like, to me, that could have been 6 pages, you know. But that's really my only criticism of the whole thing, is just, and part of that may be the fact that we're reading this as one volume as opposed to reading 24 monthly issues as they're coming out. You know what I mean? So maybe I would have felt a little differently if we'd been reading them, you know, as a monthly series as opposed to reading this as one book as part of this overall story. But that's really my only criticism, because otherwise, like, I was kind of blown away. You know, we talk about the art being so crisp and so clean and you know, looking like animation, whatever.
It's like when she jumps into the air, it's like you feel her jumping into the air.
The way they blurred it, they use the computer to blur the lines and everything, motion.
Yeah.
But one of the things that really blew me away was how gory it actually gets. Because you really don't expect it, because, like, again, it looks so crisp, it looks so clean, it looks so neat. But then she grabs the sword and does one slice and, like, decapitates one guy, eviscerates another guy, you know, cuts off half of another guy's head in one blow. You know, so you have this page of this frozen in time moment where you see these entrails flying out. You see that blood trail. You see the brains oozing out of the skull, which I really didn't expect.
Right.
Because again, it looks so clean and so nice and so perfect that when you see, you know, somebody reach out and punch somebody else in the jaw, flies up, like rips off of their face, and you can see like the tongue and the jaw flying through the air.
That's kind of what reminded me of Cross, I think.
Because it was so gory and graphic.
And clean. Cross is like that too, I think, where it's like, you know, really, you know, it's crisp violence. You know? It's in your face.
As opposed to like a god somewhere, which we talked about last month, that did kind of have a rough feel to it at times when it got into a lot of that kind of stuff. This stays crisp and clean and nice throughout. Because even when you're looking at the entrails, they're still very clean and bloody entrails. You know what I mean?
Which I think gives it a realer effect to me.
It makes it, because it's so detailed and crisp. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I can definitely see that.
So I'm glad you like Sora.
I definitely want to read it.
Here's the thing, folks. When we pick these out, we try to stay true to our nature and to keep the show fresh. We don't actually talk about what we feel about it to each other until we're actually here at the show. So, I mean, all week I was like, ooh, I really like Sword, I really like Sword, I want to know what he thinks of Sword. And here we are, so it adds to the excitement.
Well, and also, your wife liked the first issue, didn't she?
Yes, she did. And you know what? My wife has not read a lot of comics.
So she did. Well, I don't think she likes comics in general because you buy them.
Probably, yeah.
So right there, she's like, eh, comics. Yeah. But she liked the first
issue,
right?
She's a reader, though. I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah.
But, well, I'm glad you like Sword. I did, too. I was really interested in the characters. I don't know how interested I am so much in the antagonists. They could have just made it one guy.
Right.
And I would have been fine with that.
Right.
You know?
But they needed the dialogue between them.
Sure.
To play off each other.
They all have their three elements. They're supposed to be four, so we don't know what happens to the fourth
guy. Oh, he's dead. Remember? They killed him 4,000 years ago. Demetrios killed him.
Oh, when
he got the sword, when he pulled the sword off the statue.
I must have missed that. I apologize, folks. Yeah, okay. Yep. It's in here.
You're saying that, you're not even on the right page.
Right. No.
But you're just trusting that I'm right.
Yeah.
Which is good. Good man. That's what you should do. Trust that I'm right. All right, folks, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break here.
Well, hold on.
What? Oh, wait, you got more?
So no, I just want to ask you.
What?
Would you buy this comic book?
Well, let me see here. How much is this Volume 1 trade paperback? If I had to buy it, $14.99, yes.
Okay.
This is $14.99 for this trade paperback. This is definitely a buy.
And who's the buy again?
The Luna Brothers.
Image. Through Image.
Oh, yeah. Through Image Comics, yes, Luna Brothers. They also did Spider-Woman Origin for Marvel. So if you saw that series, you're familiar with them too. But Girls was the big title, had boobies. But this one, definitely, for $14.95, you really can't beat the story that's in this book. And like I said, I think there's four volumes altogether. So we'll be reading volume 2 here in a couple months.
Sure.
So we'll get back to that.
Fantastic.
All right. So we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we have a single issue here from Wildstorm. Welcome to Tranquility, One Foot in the Grave, number 1. So we'll talk about that right after this.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to popculturenetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at popculturenetwork.com.
Check out www.lockerroomhq.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.popculturenetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on the Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is another episode of Comaholics here.
This is another episode?
Another episode.
Is this episode 3?
Episode
we started
12.
Another episode.
Yes, it's like Deadpool. We're counting backwards from 5,000. So we're back, and we're drinking some more Scottish ale here. Do you like it now, after you've had a couple?
Everything tastes better after 4. You're wearing your Flash shirt again. I just realized that.
I'm in love with
you. You wore that shirt last time we did this show.
I'm in love with this shirt.
Have you worn it the entire time?
Yes, I've never
I cannot prove that you have not worn that shirt.
Hold on. Yeah. Same
funk?
Yeah.
Mm.
So.
Yes.
Welcome to Tranquility.
One foot in the grave.
One foot in the grave.
Right. Because this is, I believe, a follow-up to an earlier series.
Oh, okay.
And so, this was sent to us by Wildstorm for review. We have to, say that they sent it to us.
Thank you, Wildstorm.
Yes, we appreciate it. And so, first of all, let me ask you, starting with the artwork, what'd you think about the artwork? This is from, what was it, Horacio Dominguez, I think is how you pronounce that?
The first thing that comes to mind, it's kind of campy at first.
Yes.
Well,
it starts out like a tabloid.
Right.
The first couple pages are looking like, shocking true crime magazine.
Yeah, this mayor, this monster. And it's a kind of almost the opposite of what we were just talking about earlier with Sword. It's not real crisp, not real clean. It's very animated, even more so.
Well, I'd say it's still clean. It's not the same, but it's not like sketchy.
No, it's not sketchy, no.
So I'd say it's still very clean, but yeah, it's more caricaturish?
Yes. Very animated. The flow between the frames is real simple. We're trying to get as much as we can out of one issue here, so bear with us.
Well, I think this is only going to be like a 5-minute segment, right? As opposed to some of the others.
But honestly, my first instinct when I started reading the first few pages was I wasn't sure if this was going to grab me.
Right.
To be quite honest with you, it was a little confusing. In fact, I remember telling you after I read it,
you wanted to read it again.
I had to go back and start over. At least read the first 10 pages again. I don't know if it's because of the writing style or if it's the flow of the artwork. I'm still confused as whether or not what speed bump hit me along the way when I was reading this, where like my attention was diverted. Well, and it starts off with this little skeleton guy
as part of the tabloid, kind of like this magazine.
Tales from the Crypty, creepy little skeleton dude talking about this mayor and how he's a murderer and, bad guy.
And you're not really sure, because this is a first issue, if this is this a character that's going to be throughout the story? Is this character somebody, or is, you find out eventually that he's just there for the first two pages. Or technically, he's just there for page two.
Right.
And then you never see him again.
And then it goes in like this whole courtroom
scene. But he's talking about the mayor character, and the mayor character is the focus of the book.
Yeah.
So, I did feel that the first couple pages were kind of clunky. It didn't feel like it flowed very smoothly.
And especially if this is supposed to be portraying something that's already been out there, and it's supposed to be like a jump in sort of thing.
Right. It's supposed to be your refresher. You're supposed to know that something happened with this mayor. He's been accused of murder. He went to jail. And you kind of get the feeling in the first couple pages like he's going to be executed, but then you find out he's actually getting released, and so that's where the story goes.
I did like that part though.
How it threw you off?
They fooled me. Yeah, I was like, oh boy, they're gonna they're gonna give this boy the chair.
But yeah, I did feel it was a little clunky from the start, but I also felt that by the time I got to the end of the book, I was really interested.
I was okay at the end too.
Like once I got to the end of it, because the whole first of all, we're just going to spoil the book because it's already out there and whatever. But he's accused of murder.
The reporter says
he killed another superhero.
Sure.
And then you find out at the end of this issue that person he supposedly killed walks into this party, like just shows up. He's not dead after all. So I thought once I got to that hook, at the end of the issue, I'm like, okay, I do want to read the next issue and find out what happened. Because I did feel like, there are times when you read a comic and you get to the end of it and you feel like I've wasted so much time on this book, I don't ever want to read another issue You know, it's like I've already devoted enough time to this series. I don't ever have to read it again. Whereas this one, I felt like I've devoted enough time reading this issue. I want to know what happens next.
It's like when I got to about Deadpool Core 4. For me, folks. Yeah, I threw it out there. Yeah, I did. You know.
Wait. Then once you got to 4, you wanted to keep reading, or once you got to 4, you never wanted to read again.
I'm a Deadpool fan.
Right.
I'm still collecting them. I know I'm silly, but you know,
So what? No. But what I'm asking is, when you got to Deadpool Core 4, did you not want to read 5, or did you think, well, I've read up to 4, I might as well read 5 also?
I felt like I had to read 5.
I see. I gotcha. Well, I would say this is a little bit friendlier than that. I actually enjoyed this book.
Oh, no.
You know, unlike Rob Liefeld artwork at Deadpool Core, yeah. I actually enjoyed the artwork from Horatio. I hope I'm saying this right. Horatio Dominguez.
Dominguez.
I hope I'm saying that right. But written by Gail Simone. And the one thing I didn't really care for at all was this bunny,
the wife?
Yeah, the wife. This whole page where she's
the
baking
teary-eyed
a cake.
Meatloaf making.
Oh, the meatloaf. That's yes. What it was. Meatloaf.
Ah! Meatloaf! Yeah. It was like, it was trying to be like semi-erotic while she's like making this meatloaf and crying tears over all of her woes with her superhero husband. And, well, cause she's like.
And she's telling these two other.
Yeah, these like actress waitress chicks. Well, I don't even know what they were.
Like, one of them's pregnant, one of them's not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe that's a chick thing. Yeah. Maybe it's a woman writer doing a conversation between chicks for dudes. Yeah. It just doesn't work out as well, perhaps. Mm. But I'd say that one page I really didn't care for a whole lot.
Two pages.
Well, two. I mean, whatever. But,
actually, three. Hold on. No, four. Four pages, folks.
but everything else, I thought the two cops,
uh-huh.
Escorting the mayor to his party, I dug everything about that.
Oh,
they get attacked and they're dying off and,
it was a great ending. And then like, and meanwhile, there's this whole party going on and it's very pop culture-ish. I liked it. It was like kind of like campy superhero stuff going on. You've got this like, this zombie guy, I don't know, green zombie guy with like the two hot chicks on either side.
Like all the characters that they drew, I don't know if these are all characters that show up in the first series or it's just like, hey, draw a room full of colorful looking superhero types. You know what I mean? But I dug the artwork, I dug these characters, seeing them on there, and there were a lot of them where I was like, I kind of want to know about that guy a little bit more, you know? I did enjoy it.
Yes, Mr. Zombie Zeke. I think.
A zombie Zeke. Yeah. There you go.
Can I get some of them chicken wings, Mr. Zeke? Yeah, I like that.
But you know, again, when they showed some of the other superheroes playing chess in the park, like late at night, getting ready to go to this party, and they're unsure of this mayor guy, whether or not he's really innocent, or they think he's probably guilty, got off on a technicality, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I really started getting into that story, and I'm like, okay, I enjoyed this issue enough that I do want to try to get my hands on issue 2, issue 3, issue 4, whatever, and get the rest of the story, because I really did, you know, once you get to that twist ending at the end, I was like, okay, I want to know.
Well, the next one's called Cabbages and Kings. So you just
there you go. Which, by the way, was the name of my band's first album.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Cabbages and Kings. So, what did you think about the story?
I'm not as enthusiastic. I stumbled over it. It was hard for me to try to
face the microphone.
In my simple mind, it was hard for me to follow this. It was chopped up. It was chopped up from the beginning, I think. The flow.
Just too many cuts to different scenes and stuff happening at the same time.
And I agree with you. They could have taken the 4 pages out of the bunny girl.
Well, I don't know about out, but maybe condensed or something. I don't know. But
I have no interest in her character.
Except that she used to be hot.
Yeah, but like the skeleton guy says at the beginning, the town's full of hot chicks. And he's right. Just about every young lady in here is well endowed. But I will read the next issue. I will read the next issue.
Definitely. So if I get the next one, you'll read it?
Yeah, go ahead and put it on my subscriber list. I'll give it a shot. Why not?
But yeah, you know, overall, this is a $3.99. Yeah, this is a $3.99 book. So a little on the pricier side of but well, I guess it's becoming the new standard is $3.99.
Well, for me, I've found that I sometimes get a little stale in my collection, in my stack, and it's nice to throw something complete, and now for something completely different.
Right.
You know.
Something to mix it up. It's not your standard character.
And you will get this. So I would say thumbs up, buy it, check it out.
This is the first issue. So again, this is the first issue. We might feel different after two more issues. You know, after two more issues, this may be the greatest book we ever read, or we might be getting ready to punch somebody in the face. You never know.
But, or each other.
Well, better yet. So, but you know, I have to say for a book I knew nothing about.
If you're gonna punch somebody, punch a friend.
Yes. But for a book I knew nothing about that just kind of showed up in the mail one day and it was like, hey, here's a copy, read it. I found this much more enjoyable than some of the other random stuff that shows up.
And you noticed that I gave it the respect of taking it out of the manila envelope that you gave me it in
and putting it in a bag of board. That's right.
So,
you must have enjoyed it somewhat if you're willing to spend a bag and board on protecting
it.
So.
That's right. But, yeah. Love of literature.
Yeah, so, and to be honest, if we hadn't gotten a review copy of this, I never would have paid any attention to it.
No.
I would have saw
it on the shelf. The cover's kind of cool. It might have drawn my attention a little bit. But you know what? The cover, as most covers are, doesn't really have a lot of context with the actual story.
Yeah, actually, now that I'm looking at this cover really has nothing to do with the story on the inside.
Not at all. Not at all. Who's this guy?
He's not in the story.
Some guy with a big, giant golden M on his chest. I think it's an M. Is that an M?
Yeah, he's part Civil War Spider-Man in the red and
Superman
gold suit, part Superman, with part Superman. Statue of Liberty.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, again, I would have never picked this up to look at in the first place. So the fact that it was forced in front of me as a review piece, I have to say, well, okay.
Thank you, Wildstorm.
Thank you. And it's definitely something that I will check out issue 2. So maybe we'll talk about that next month. Talk about issue 2.
Next month. Ooh.
Although let's give a preview. Yeah. Well, first of all, when we come back from this break, we'll be talking about our final trade paperback. And this is one that it's fair to say we both really enjoyed this book.
Oh yeah, that's one best for last, folks.
All right,
best for last.
So when we come back from the break, we will be talking about I Kill Giants from Image Comics. So that's to keep you hooked for the next segment. But also next month, we'll give you a little preview of what's happening next month.
Can I talk about next month? I want to talk about next month.
Okay, talk about next month.
Okay. Well, you know, it's October.
So Oktoberfest?
Yes.
Are we going to have an Oktoberfest beer?
Well, I don't have enough time for that. We're going to be doing Crossed.
Why are we doing Crossed?
It's Halloween, man.
Oh, Halloween.
My favorite holiday. Chink on that one. And we're also going to be doing, was it The Cult?
Batman The Cult.
Which is practically a classic at this point, because how long ago was that?
Well, it came out, I believe, in 88 or 89, sometime around there. It was actually about the time that I really started collecting hardcore. Was right about the time that it came out. So we will have that to talk about, which is an incredibly graphic and gory story.
Yeah.
So that's good for Halloween. And then what's the third one we're doing?
What is the third one we're going to do?
Not Walking Dead. We did Walking Dead last time. 28 Days Later.
28 Days Later, okay.
From Boom Studios. Yep. Which is actually, the reason why I said Walking Dead is because whenever I think of 28 Days Later, I always think it's kind of a shame that Walking Dead is so good because 28 Days Later is also really good.
You think it would fill that slot?
But it's never going to get attention because everyone reads Walking Dead. So we're going to talk about 28 Days Later. Hopefully I can convert you to 28 Days. Not convert you, but
I've read one issue. So
hopefully not convert, but bring you on board. We'll have the first trade.
Okay.
The first trade, which is, I believe, issues 1 through 9.
By the way, folks, I love this job. This is great.
So, anyway, that's next month for Halloween.
Yes.
So our October episode.
Oh,
so.
By the way, I will have definitely have a porter.
Okay.
To drink that night, and then also I think I was gonna brew. Oh, I grow my own hops, so the next batch will be a really crisp Centennial Pale Ale.
All right, there you go. So we're going to take another quick break here, but when we come back, we will be talking about I Kill Giants, which is actually, well, we'll talk about it when we get back from the break. So stay tuned, everybody. We got lots to say.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to PopCultureNetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at PopCultureNetwork.com.
Check out www.LockerRoomHQ.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.PopCultureNetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on the Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
And we're back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Yeah, well, it's just down here at the bottom.
You can't
see it. Some technical stuff going on here as we have a much more difficult time dealing with some technology. Bore me another one, Maki.
Farewell adieu to fair spirit ladies.
All right, so final segment here on the show tonight.
My favorite segment.
The final segment?
Yes.
Just because it's the final segment?
No,
like, you always like the final segment?
No, this time it's my favorite segment.
I see. Because it's your favorite book out of everything we're talking
yes.
about this month? Well, then why don't you kick us off? What are we talking about?
We are talking about I Kill Giants, written by Joe Kelly, and the artist is J.M. Ken Nomura.
You know, you realize you have to talk towards the microphone?
J.M. Ken Nomura. Did I say that right?
I have no idea.
Okay, all right.
Who's the writer again?
Joe Kelly.
Okay. Now this book, we're actually reading this book because this is a favorite of the PopCultureNetwork.com message boards. Ryan Porter and Sween Hollick, both on the boards, I believe it's those two guys, were both big champions of this book. And because they basically, you know, said it was so wonderful, I said, all right, fine, we'll see how these guys are at picking out books. So ordered a copy, got it in here for us to talk about on the show. So, are those guys right or are they crazy?
They're not crazy. Tell them what they want, Bob!
Does that mean they're right, though?
No. I'll just say they're not crazy. No, good job. Good job, fellas. I enjoyed this. I have a couple children, so sometimes when I read these, I don't get to read it all at once. I get stopped. You know how it is. But, It was very captivating. First of all, I'd like to talk about the artwork. Kind of Japanese style artwork. Big faces, small eyes, big eyes here and there. The frame structure is really good.
Found it very difficult to get into.
Really?
Like, I thought the first, when you're sitting down.
To jump into the world.
Like, just sitting down, opening the book, and reading the first few pages, it just took me, I think, a little bit longer than normal to kind of get into the flow of it, because it is, it gets very.
I find that Japanese animation for me, it seems to go like two-dimensionally, three-dimensionally, like, it kind of jumps back and forth.
Okay.
And it I could see where, is that what you're talking about?
Well, I'm just talking about it's very, I don't even know what the right word, like there, it feels very hyper a lot of times in that first few pages.
Like fast paced?
She's in, well, it's just, everything is exaggerated. over the top. She's in the classroom, and the teacher talks to her, and she's got to stand up and yell, and she's wearing bunny ears that are flopping around, and it just kind of, it just, you know, like I said, it just took me a little bit of getting into. But having said that, once I got into the flow of it, I read that entire trade paperback in less than an hour. I mean, it was just one of those things where...
And this is probably, how many pages?
I don't know, it's pretty big.
It's a pretty big book.
And so, it's one of those things where I just sat down, I just kind of started reading it, and then I just started devouring the book.
Okay, let's clarify this. This is a book on itself. There's no other volumes. This would be the entire story.
Okay.
One of the things that I really liked about it, and I didn't discover it until I read the, you know, the footnotes at the end, was their decision on how, for the artwork.
Okay.
And, you mentioned the bunny ears.
Right.
The artist struggled a lot, with trying to finally come up with the final makeup of the protagonist. She started out as a simple girl with just kind of like one of those knit, you know, hippie caps on.
Barbara, the main character.
Barbara,
of the book.
Yes. And then they decided that they really wanted to separate her from the norm. They really wanted her to stand out and be that outcast. So they had kind of like the animal ears on her, and then they just
like panda ears, yeah, and cat ears.
And then they just went like, and you know, part of it, as it goes along in the artwork with the character, it's almost like the ears are actually her pigtails. Sort of.
Well, kind of, yeah. I can see that.
Where it just kind of melds into that at one point, where you're like, oh, those are just your pigtails. But basically, in a nutshell, the premise is, this would be a great, like I was telling you earlier, this would be something that I would want my teenage daughters to read.
You don't have teenage daughters. You have little kids.
When they're teenagers.
So like in 10 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's very heartfelt.
Well, let's talk a little bit. This book is called I Kill Giants.
Right.
And in the first couple pages, this little girl is in school, and, she declares to the world that her job is that she kills giants. And as you go through the book, she sees fairies, different times. She, has a special trinket in a bag that she says is a ferocious hammer that she will use when slaying giants, and that she is in training, basically to kill giants. Why?
Well, you know, it's funny, when I read comics, I always try to like think of something off the top of my head that's just like, oh, that's kind of like a blah, blah, blah. It kind of has a Charlie Brown syndrome to it. Okay. Where she's kind of the Charlie Brown. You know, she gets kicked around, but you know she's special. But you don't really find out why until later.
So, wait, go back to this, because I'm very, so go back to this.
Wait, what are you talking about?
What do you mean Charlie Brown syndrome?
Well, you know, like, well, she's kind of like the Charlie Brown, you know? She's odd. She doesn't really fit in. Lucy's always picking on her. There's kind of a Lucy in there. I don't know. You know, it's like I said, when I read
comics.
She's
an underdog.
She's an underdog.
Underdog.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. When I read comics, I always try to think of whatever off the top of my head is, you know, a parody of it.
Right.
So.
Okay. All right. So she's the underdog. We know that, something about her family structure we know doesn't work. She doesn't seem to have any sort of dad.
And there's a great mystery about her anger and why she's so upset.
Right. Her dad is not in the picture. She has, an older sister who seems to be the one in charge, cooks her meals, you know, has the job, all that kind of stuff. And there's something in her house. There's something upstairs in her house that makes this terrible sound, that she hides from. That she doesn't want to acknowledge most of the time. And Barbara actually lives like underneath a table in almost like a supply room, you know, with a sheet over the table, and she sleeps
with
under
like
there.
Cave drawings everywhere.
Yeah, she just lives under there. And instead of being in a, you know, bedroom or whatever.
Well, the drama, you know, the main drama of this is, I mean, should we really give it away? I mean, how far do we want to go with this? I mean, do we want to just tell what's going on in here?
We should, I think we should, boy, that is
Cause,
tough.
Because honestly, folks, I really want you to read
this. Because what makes the story
and I don't
really...
want to spoil it, but, you know, it
there's,
works.
Well, okay. It's safe to say that there's a lot of stuff in her life that she's having a hard time dealing with. I mean, that's standard stuff. I mean, when you're a teenager, you're growing up, life changes, your body's changing, you know.
Well, then let's just talk about some of the lighter parts of the book that still build a little bit on what's going on in the story. One of the things I liked is her creative imagination. I mean, this girl's playing Dungeons and Dragons
right. At
her local comic book store. And she's got a wild imagination about how she's a giant slayer. And she also believes in, like, pixies and fairies and stuff. You know, where she's, you know, she'd just gotten her butt kicked and she was really depressed. And all these, like, little fairy critters were coming at her and talking to her. This little girl has built this whole world in her head to compensate for something that you don't find out till later. And right. I think that's what we're getting at. We really don't want to give that away because it spoils the whole story. To be honest with you, I loved reading this book. I enjoyed it. I would recommend anybody to read this. But at the same time, I'm also one of those people when I read something like this, I probably won't read it again.
Really?
Yeah. Sometimes when things are...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, where it hits you so perfectly that reading it a second time will take something away from your memory
right.
of it.
So for us to discuss the denouement, the resolution of would not do you justice. So I think that, you know, We'll try to leave that out a little bit. But I would like to talk about the monsters in this. The giants and the titan in this.
Yeah, because she does spend a lot of time talking to her friend.
Yeah. Sophia.
Sophia moves into the neighborhood, wants to be a friend of hers.
Her only friend.
Right. Well, I mean, she's got her Dungeons and Dragons friends that she hangs out with.
No, they hate her. She's like the DM, and she like kills everybody. That's right, I'm using acronyms. I'm a dork. That's right, I was playing D&D probably when I was like 9 or something, so.
We were playing D&D 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how long it's been, actually, about 10 years. Well,
eight
years.
You know what's funny? When I was reading this, it reminded me when I was a kid, when I started playing D&D when I was 9, I played with my uncles who's like 5 years older than me. And they would make me waste the time of drawing up a character and then just completely obliterate me. And she's the DM in this, and
she's doing the exact same
thing. Yeah, she's just, you know, she just wants to destroy all the characters that she's a DM for. So
she spends a lot of time talking about this mythology that she's built, talking about how there are monsters, there are giants, there are titans, how they all have these different roles to play. How she has this item in her little bag that she gives Blank. I forget what's the name of her.
It's her
hammer.
It's a baseball player. And that's another thing. They don't really completely explain the connection of how she knows about this baseball. Because I mean, honestly, you know, this kid's not into sports. So I mean, somehow there's a connection in her past with the baseball player and
Kovaleski.
Kovaleski, yeah.
Yes, Kovaleski, who apparently was some...
Was it Red Sox? I can't remember now. Bear with me. I'm sure there'll be, like, a link, and somebody will tell us what's going on here, but...
But it's a sports guy, and he beat the Giants, the New York...
That's right.
New York Giants.
And was he
pitcher or something? I don't remember. Yeah, but anyway, regardless... So she chose that name for her hammer, and basically this hammer is what she's going to use to destroy the giants.
The Titan. The ultimate. You know, the Titan is based...
He's like the daddy.
Yeah, the big daddy of the giants. There is a short little soliloquy.
Oh, have another drink there.
where they explain this, and the whole pecking order of the Giants up to the Titan.
Right. And of course, again, she's built up all this mythology. She has all this stuff, and the story is told through her eyes. So I think that's one thing that you kind of get the feeling for later on, is that when she describes things, or when things happen around her, you're not really seeing those events the way they're happening. You're seeing those events the way she's interpreting them. So like, for instance, when she's in her house, and whatever this thing is that lives on the second floor that she's trying to avoid, whenever it makes a sound, she exaggerates that sound. She exaggerates the impact of it. She exaggerates how loud it really is. She exaggerates...
Okay. All right, well then, you know what? I got a question for you. How did you interpret the scene where Sophia is upstairs?
With the soda?
Yes.
And she drops the soda on the carpet?
That was really strange. What happened there? Okay, yeah, here it is. So, she like calls out to Sophia, and then like, Barbara like tries to motion her back to her room, like, you know.
Sophia's staring in this other bedroom. Yeah. Staring at something.
And by the way, Sophia's got a black eye at this point because, the bully,
beat up on Sophia too, and whatever.
But it was it was kind of...
Oh, no, no, because Barbara accidentally hit her.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, alright. That's the beer talking, folks. I should have remembered that.
But see, here's the thing. Well, I mean, there's... Okay,
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Right.
That was
we can't really talk about that a whole lot because that's part of the big reveal at the end of the story. But
it's really eerie. It kind of reminded me of The Shining.
The Shining. Don't you mean The Shining?
No, The Shining.
Shh. Do you want to get sued for copyright? Okay, but that whole scene, Sophia sees something in this other bedroom, and Barbara tries to get her away from there. Whatever Sophia sees spooks her. And Sophia runs away, and when Barbara tries to go get Sophia, she looks in and she sees something disturbing.
Yeah.
Now what she sees
is her interpretation.
And what's drawn on the page isn't reality.
No. And you know what? It's so artfully done that it's hard to distinguish between like what the artist is trying to show you is, okay, this is reality, or oh, this is her imagination.
Right, because Sophia's reaction, you can kind of understand once you find out what the story is actually about. Sophia's reaction kind of makes sense on one level, but at the same time, it seems a little like an overreaction. And so you know that you begin to understand how Barbara is seeing things. Barbara is probably overplaying what Sophia's reaction actually is.
And that's when that whole heartfelt sympathy really kicks in for me.
Right.
When you start...
Because there is a while where you're like this girl's a little bastard.
Yeah. She's a little...
Yeah, where you're just like...
Expletive behind it.
She's mean to everybody else. She doesn't trust anybody else. There's a school counselor who's trying to help her out, and she's just treating this woman like dirt.
Oh, can I say it? She slaps her in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally, slaps her in the face.
So, you know, for a while there, you're almost like this girl needs a spanking. You know, it's like there's something wrong with her. But, again, that has to do with that whole teenager coming of age, dealing with the crises that happen in your life and all of that kind of stuff. So again, it's her overreaction and her trying to deal with the stress and the problems in her life, and the way it plays out isn't really reality, but it's the reality that she's built for herself. And again, that whole ending, but that's the other thing about the ending is that, well, I mean, it only makes sense. It's called I Kill Giants.
Right.
She's getting ready to kill this Titan. So this Titan appears at the end of the book.
Yes, there is definitely a confrontation with the Titan.
But at the same time...
Oh, and how scary was the Titan?
I
really like the artwork on the Titan. Like, it was kind of epic looking. Like, it I mean, I think that most of the talent of the art came from the artwork at the end, that chapter six with the Titan. I mean, if I were to ever talk to the artist, I mean, I would have to say that chapter six was really...
Where the Titan attacks.
Yes. Can we talk about what's his name?
Kovaleski?
Kovaleski's hammer. You actually really get to see the hammer.
Right.
Like in her vision, like right. in her mind, what that hammer was.
Well, but like on the one hand, the ending.
We can't, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's like we can't really get into it without kind of giving away part of it. But I think there's kind of like this X-Files feeling to it in a way.
Bizarro world.
Well, no, where it's like, after her big battle with the Titan, there's a news report, and there's a reporter talking about how it's a big nor'easter storm that came in and blew through the area and destroyed a whole bunch of stuff and whatever. And, you know, to Barbara, it was her fighting the Titan. Mm-hmm. To the quote-unquote real world, the storm blew through and, you know, like big hurricane force winds right. that destroyed a bunch of stuff. But you almost kind of get that X-Files feeling. Like, maybe she actually did fight a monster.
Oh,
like, maybe
okay,
there
yeah.
actually was
yeah.
a creature that she did battle with
That's
on an epic battle scale.
That's what I was getting at earlier. The artwork, it confused you. It was hard for me while I was reading it to decide, okay, is this her imagination or is this real?
Yeah, because you almost get that feeling like because she believes it so much, like it did come real. Because the way the other characters, like her sister and Sophia and everyone else reacts, either, you know, again, we're seeing it through her eyes. So either we're seeing her eyes of them accepting the fact that there was this giant monster, this Titan that she was fighting, or, again, she ran out in the middle of this big, gigantic storm, and they all just kind of freaked out because she was running outside in the middle of, this massive thunderstorm, whatever. But again, you almost feel like maybe there was a giant monster that she actually got to fight at the end of the story. But I don't really want to say a whole lot else there because I want other people to read the story and, you know, kind of pull out their own interpretation of that because of how it plays in with some of the other stuff we're not talking about.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say I give it an A.
Yes. I mean, this
is... I give it an A. Buy this. It's only $15.99.
It was $15.99.
If it was $25.99, I'd buy.
Actually,
it.
I was expecting it to be $24.99 when you flipped
and
it over.
And once again, Image Comics.
Yeah. So if that was $25, I would still say buy it. The fact that it's $15.99, like there's no excuse not to own this book.
In fact, as we were talking earlier, I would like to save this and let my wife read this because I think she'd really enjoy it.
You know, I tell you what, your birthday was yesterday.
Yeah.
So that is your copy. I will
Fantastic.
Order another copy for me, okay? Happy
Fantastic.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. 23 years old.
23. Oh, 23?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm subtracting by 10.
That's amazing.
So yeah, go out and get I Kill Giants if you don't have a copy of this.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot recommend this book enough.
And
I mean,
please,
this is a must read.
And please, by the way, read the behind the scenes. Too.
Which I need to do. I haven't
yes.
done, so.
Yes, because it explains a lot about the artwork.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Will do. Well, I guess that's going to wrap it up. Listen, we've got an hour-long show here, so...
Yeah, no, it's been fun. Thank you for listening.
Of course, it's midnight now. It's 12:08. I got to drive home all the way across town.
I got a couch right there.
Yeah,
steps away.
I got two kids I got to deal with in the morning.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Hey, cheers to the kids.
Cheers to the kids.
So... Everybody, we'd like to say thank you for joining us, and Dirt. And
check you later.
And the Apocalypse would like to say zip it up and zip it in.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. You think maybe we should try to figure it out at some point?
Nah.
No?
Okay.
All right.